code of silence that we don't dare speak. There's a wall between us and a river so deep. We keep pretending that there's nothing wrong. There's a code of silence and it can't go on.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on Friday the 19th of September 2008. I always advise newcomers to look into cuttingthroughthematrix.com and go into the website. You'll see so many free audios I've done on past talks, and you can download them and listen to them at your leisure. I try to fit it all together as much as possible, as humanly possible, with the knowledge at least I've picked up in my lifetime, and give you shortcuts into the big picture. And we need shortcuts now because things are really rolling ahead full steam. Also look into Alan Watt Sentinel.eu, where you can download transcripts in the various languages of Europe. As I say, we're on a roll now into this new world order, and you can't read anything, any paper, newspaper, you can't listen to any news without it coming across to you that things are really changing quickly. For those in the US and Canada and Mexico, it's the fear of the dollar crashing that's going to be the big stick into the final induction into integration. That's what they'll use for it. The first part they used mightily was the terrorism aspect, and having different governments made it too cumbersome and less safe for the people. Therefore, they created Fortress America, and they've been signing deals to further closer ties, as they call integration, every year since 2005. 2010 is the final one. And I'll guarantee you, this whole stage thing with the dollar was meant to make us all terrified, thinking everything's getting out of hand, thinking he's afraid, and then they'll come forward with the solution, the only solution which will be complete and utter integration. What a beautiful way to bring it across. Yet he's a different technique in Europe. It took 50 years of stealth and lying to the public about integration and losing your national sovereignty. In the US, it's under the guise of terrorism and economics. That's how it's being done. And they're playing it out right now. Big drama for the public. Big drama. At least to give us some drama. And while we're watching this happening, since 9/11, 2001, we've watched our world changing. It truly is a world change. Every country has gone into action and signed the same massive homeland-type security bills, anti-terrorism laws. You see them patting down their own people at airports and border crossings. And this, again, is to get you geared into a completely new system where you are insignificant. I always remember Bertrand Russell, who said we must create a form of apathy amongst the public. Well, how would you create apathy? You make them feel that everything's out of control around them and that they truly are insignificant. You have no power to change things. That's the technique that's being used. So when you feel really down and you've got a little panic coming on, just shrug it off and remember that this soon will pass, because we're going into the Brave New World scenario at a gallop. A socialist-controlled society with the fascists at the top, of course, where every part of your life from birth to death will be planned for you. There'll be no guesswork involved. A lot of people will like socialism because they don't like having to make big decisions on anything. But then there's others who don't like it at all. H.G. Wells, in his own book called The Open Conspiracy, said thousands will die fighting this new world order. And no doubt they're ready for that too. We'll watch them build up an army, take care of that. Back with more after these messages. Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix. As I said before, I'm trying to give shortcuts to especially the young who will live through the worst of the big changes that already are, in fact. In fact, as they go to school, they're definitely living through big changes because there's a new indoctrination going on at school, preparing their minds for a totalitarian-type system, which they'll think is all quite normal. After all, they're getting padded down going into school and padded while they're in school, and that's going to be their life from then on in Civvy Street or adulthood. But this is how it's done. And you thought the Nazi system was dead with World War II. People thought the Nazis were all in Germany. Nazism was a philosophy, and it was meant to be an international philosophy. You always find the same things happen in totalitarian regimes. They set the army on the public eventually. That was something the founding fathers of America were well aware of. That's why they also had big discussions about whether they should or should not have a standing army. But some of them got around that by creating what they called the Marines, technically not the army. But they are army regardless. And this is the standard thing, this article I'm going to read, is the standard thing that happens in a militarized society. They want us to be a militarized society as part, just one step towards the brave new world. There are many steps to go, but this is one part of it, the Orwellian phase before we go into the Huxleyan phase. Sometimes they overlap. We know that they're doing that with the genetic engineering to create new types of creatures and humans, etc. They will take over from the old type, the old man, yesterday's man, as the term is called. And in the process, too, they're getting us used to, as I say, a militarized society. They want a war scenario with rationing, people being moved and evacuated, refugees, all of that for this 100 years war. 100 years to bring all of their brave new world utopia into being and reduce the population at the same time. It's interesting, too, how they've convinced the public and are still convincing them that we are all the problem. We caused it all, apparently. All of us. We who are given a system of produce and consume, while the elite have now changed their system into a post-industrial and post-technological society. We're just useless eaters now. So it's our fault, even though we're going on producing and consuming, it's our fault that we're doing so, apparently. And who says this? The big foundations all say it. Even the Canadian Green Party has come out with this manifesto on the need to reduce the population. That doesn't surprise me if you look at the history of the Green Party. And remember, the color green is tremendously popular right now, and the different lodges they have in the mystery of religion, with its blue, and its black, and its red, and the green. All part of it. And who started up the Green Party? Someone's father, who was the best pal of Stalin. Look into it and you'll find that out. This is from the armytimes.com. It's from September 2008. Brigade Homeland Tour starts October 1st. 3rd Infantry 1st BCT trains for a new dwell time mission. Helping people at home, help military with guns will help people at home, may become a permanent part of the active army. By Gina Cavallaro, September 8th, 2008. The 3rd Infantry Division's 1st Brigade Combat Team, this is the combat team, who spent 35 of the last 60 months in Iraq, patrolling in full battle rattle, as they call it, helping restore essential services and escorting supply convoys. Now, remember what I've just read here. Restoring essential services and escorting supply convoys. Now they're training for the same mission with a twist at home. The same mission, right, with a twist at home. Beginning October the 1st, for 12 months, the 1st BCT will be under the day-to-day control of U.S. Army North, the Army Service component of Northern Command, that's NORTHCOM, as an on-call federal response force for natural or man-made emergencies and disasters, including terrorist attacks. It's not the first time an active duty unit duty has been tapped to help at home. In August 2005, for example, where Hurricane Katrina unleashed hell in Mississippi and Louisiana, several active duty units were pulled from various posts and mobilized to those areas, and so was Blackwater, by the way. But this new mission marks the first time an active unit has been given a dedicated assignment to NORTHCOM, a joint command established in 2002 to provide command and control for federal homeland defense efforts and coordinate defense support of civil authorities. After the first BCT finishes its dwell time mission, expectations are that another, as yet unnamed, active duty brigade will take over, and that mission will be a permanent one. Now, I've told you before that when the U.S. is finishing off its job in the Middle East, the big eating machine, this big military eating machine, will be brought back home, and that's what's happening. And it'll still be eating, believe you me. Right now, the response force requirement will be an enduring mission. How the Defense Department chooses to source that and whether or not they continue to assign them to NORTHCOM, that could change in the future, said Army Colonel Louis Vogler, Chief of NORTHCOM Future Operations. Now the plan is to assign a force every year. In other words, it'll be one after the other will be coming in as their ones going out. The command is at Peterson Air Force Base in Colorado Springs, Colorado, but the soldiers with 1st BCT, who returned in April after 15 months in Iraq, will operate out of their home post at Fort Stewart, Georgia, where they'll be able to go to school, spend time with their families, and train for the new homeland mission, as well as the counterinsurgency missions in the war zones. Stop loss will not be in effect, so soldiers will be able to leave the Army or move to new assignments during the mission, and the operational tempo will be variable. Now, when I scroll down here to the interesting part, because they go on to tell us some of the things they'll be doing at home. They may be called upon to help with civil unrest and crowd control, or to deal with potentially horrific scenarios such as massive poisoning and chaos in response to a chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, or high-yield explosive, or CBRNE attack. Training for homeland scenarios has already begun at Fort Stewart, and includes specialty tasks such as knowing how to use the jaws of life to extract a person from a mangled vehicle. Remember, this is written by a PR specialist. They have their own department. Everything the public is given to the press from the military, it goes through a PR management team. This is extra medical training for CBRNE incident and working with U.S. Forestry Services experts on how to go in with chainsaws and cut and clear trees to clear a road or area. But this is only the start of it. It says the soldiers will also learn how to use the first ever non-lethal package, a non-lethal package that the Army has fielded. First BCT Commander Colonel Roger Cloutier said, referring to crowd and traffic control equipment and non-lethal weapons designed to subdue unruly or dangerous individuals without killing them. It's a new modular package of non-lethal capabilities that they're fielding. They've been using pieces of it in Iraq, but this is the first time that these modules were consolidated and this package fielded. And because of this mission we're undertaking, we were the first to get it. The package includes equipment to stand up a hasty roadblock, spike strips for slowing, stopping, or controlling traffic. That's one to rip your tires. Shields and batons and beanbag bullets. And then we get to the usual sort of PR stuff that sort of lessens the impact of what I've just been talking about. Try to put a bit of comedy into it, as they always do. I can't think of a more noble mission than this, said Cloutier, who took command in July. We've been all over the world during this time of conflict, and our mission is to take care of citizens. I like the way you say that, take care of citizens at home, with these modular packages. Eh? And depending on where an event occurred, you're going home to take care of your hometown, your loved ones, where I guess they'll probably taser them. So there's the beginning of the open militarization as they prepare for something that's going to happen. Now, tie that in with the 90-page document that's on my website from the Department of Defense in Britain, It's also the main think tank for NATO when they foresee 30 years of rioting across the Western world. Riots because of unemployment, riots because of escalating prices, and riots because of shortage of food and other essentials. It's not hard to put it together. And we should take these things very, very seriously. I've told you before, the military is always used under tyrants to be turned on their own people. Look into the histories of Europe, something they found out all too well. All too well, because every country in Europe at some time or another turned the military on its public. That's a standard thing they do. Quite interesting. And while that's going on, we have the eugenicists. All part of this whole agenda is the eugenic agenda. Look at all the big foundations, look into what they promoted, look into the Rockefellers and others, and you find they're all eugenicists. They don't believe in keeping surplus herd around, and the public are the herd to them, you see. If you have a good job to benefit them at the top, then they'll tolerate you. But if you don't serve them well enough, they want to eliminate you. As I said before, they claim there's too many of us, and all I could do is look at the Nazi regime and the communist regime. You didn't see many cripples walking around the Soviet Union because they were doing the same darn thing there as Nazi Germany was doing, and that was killing off what they called the medically or mentally unfit. And I'm going to talk about this right after this break.
Cascadia Public Radio.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt. We're cutting through the matrix. Just before the break, I was talking about how the same Nazi type philosophy started in the Nazi Germany system with euthanasia. Before World War II started, euthanasia of what they called the fit, the unfit, the mentally subnormal, and even the elderly, and crippled people too. And as I say, if you look into the Soviet policies, I don't think they were any different, to be honest with you. We know that in China, for instance, which is a communist country, believe it or not, it's a strange mixture of communism and capitalism, but it was founded by the West, so I'm not surprised. In China, they allow many of the orphans to die. And here's the Mail Online in good old Britain, again, the home of democracy. And it says here, old people with dementia have a duty to die. A duty to die. That's very British, you see. Because this new world order, you see, you'll have a duty to serve the world state. That's their own terms for it. A duty to die and should be pushed towards death, said Baroness Warnock. She's one of the elite, you know, one of the special elite interbred types. This is by Steve Doughty, 19th of September 2008. Elderly people with dementia are wasting the lives of those who have to care for them, one of the country's most influential experts on medical ethics said yesterday. Baroness Warnock, of the names Warnock, said that for the old and sick who are contemplating dying, there's nothing wrong with feeling you ought to do so. I wonder if she's talking about herself. I somehow don't think she is. Her remarks in an interview with a church journal were the first public suggestion from any expert with close links to Whitehall, that's the British government, that euthanasia should not only be legal, but that elderly people should be pressed towards death. Lady Warnock said, "If you are demented, you're wasting people's lives, your family's lives, and you are wasting the resources of the National Health Service." Her remarks were condemned as shocking ignorance and barbaric by Alzheimer's charities. Right to Life groups furiously attacked her, and fellow supporters of euthanasia of telling the public they want a right to choose while privately supporting compulsory killing. Lady Warnock, 84, was the head of the committee which during the 1980s opened the way for legal research on human embryos. She's a real charmer, this woman, a real, real charmer, one of the real old school types, but there's lots of them lots of them over there. And in a way, I'm glad they're really showing their hand and their face for the first time. These are the same ones that pushed abortion on the public, you know, the lower classes, because they were terrified we'd outbreed them. And that was written about by Charles Galton Darwin, one of the elite himself, in his book called The Next Million Years. To continue with this one here, influential in education as well as in medical ethics, she became an open supporter of euthanasia after her ill husband was helped to die by the doctor in 1995. She told the Church of Scotland's magazine Life and Work, "I had just written an article called A Duty to Die for a Norwegian periodical. I wrote it really suggesting that there's nothing wrong with feeling you ought to do so for the sake of others as well as yourself." Now, I've told you, too, this is the kind of stuff that's getting pumped into children to do with sterilization, too many people and so on, and you'll soon find young volunteers in this sci-fi world we're now living in coming forward and offering themselves as sacrifices to save the planet. I'm not kidding. That will happen. You wait and see. She added, "I'm absolutely fully in agreement with the argument that if pain is insufferable, then someone should be given help to die. But I feel there is a wider argument that if someone absolutely desperately wants to die because they're a burden to their own family or the state, then I think they too should be allowed to die." What she's really saying here, burden to the family or the state, she's talking about economic reasons. Lady Warnock first suggested that the elderly and sick should die rather than becoming a burden 4 years ago. In 2006, she reported an attempt by fellow peers to push through a law allowing doctors to kill patients suffering unbearable pain. Some 700,000 in Britain have dementia, and this is expected to double. This is another one of their weird statistics we have no proof of, actually, over the next 30 years. Rebecca Wood, chief executive of the Alzheimer's Research Trust, said, "Lady Warnock demonstrates a shocking ignorance when espousing her highly insensitive views. People with dementia can live quite comfortably when cared for properly. The solution to our dementia crisis is not euthanasia. The answer is more research so we can find new treatments, preventions, and a cure." Well, they know what causes all of this because they've given it to us. Neil Hunt of the Alzheimer's Society said, "With the right care, a person can live a good quality of life very late into dementia." And then you have all the different ones coming back criticizing what she said. And make no mistake here, this isn't an accident she's come out with this. This is timed. It'll be timed when the other big agencies and foundations go to work on the same topic. And remember, repetition is something which is very important to get it into our subconscious minds, that this is a new normal thing to do. These are the same people, as I say, who started at the first end, the early end, the child. They wanted the unborn child destroyed, basically. They didn't want the common people to breed up. And now they're going for the other end of the spectrum, the elderly, the infirm, the sick, and so on. And it won't stop, believe you me. That's the whole thing with the pillars. The pillars all hold up the roof of the building. You knock one down, and that means it's much easier to knock the other ones down. You can't ever let them take one step forward, and you cannot ever take one step back. With these characters, there is no compromise. No compromise whatsoever. And they are on the warpath. And we better be very, very aware of this. I'll be back with more after this break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix. I'm trying to point out how we go down the slippery slope, the slope that was designed for us to go down by those who rule the world. And they always give us something with a very good reason, but there's always behind it the real reason. And we're never told the real reason until it's too late. And we have been going down this slope for a long, long time, as they created an egocentric, hedonistic type society, encouraged everyone to go around playing like Easter bunnies, and then pointing to the effects of it all and saying, my, what are we going to do? We accept abortion to begin with, and then we're down the slippery slope, because the idea is not to save you from having to bring up a child in poor economic circumstances or any of that. It was to reduce the population across the board in the lower classes, something that was widely written about by members of the elite for the last 100 years or more, in fact, all the ways back to Malthus in the 1800s. And their problem is always how to get the public to go along with it. And they put millions of dollars of propaganda into it, and millions of dollars of your tax money, utterly brainwashing you into your own extinction. There's another site that ties in with the last topic, and that's called LifeSiteNews.com. Thursday, November the 10th, 2005. And this one was talking about eugenics programs against the disabled and how so many of those with Down syndrome are killed before birth because it's become the new normal. And remember, too, these tests aren't always accurate. And after reading the first few paragraphs, it says here, it says, the late Tanis Doe, who had been a professor of social work at the University of Victoria, British Columbia, said in March 2004 that a prenatal Nazi-style extermination campaign is being waged against the disabled in most of the Western world. Read that article. It's pretty good. There's a lot of links and other articles in this particular site. And you have to take it to heart because it does affect you. We've all been taught, you see, that whatever we do doesn't affect anyone else. That's an utter lie. Because that which becomes the normal, because most are doing something, becomes law eventually. That's the same with everything. Even the ID cards that's coming in. First they make it voluntary, then it becomes the law, and a certain percentage have them. That was to say with the driving license at one time, it wasn't compulsory initially. It was voluntary. So was insurance. Once they get enough of you on it, it becomes the law. And killing, believe you me, killing becomes the same. Look at China. China is the model state for the rest of the world, according to the United Nations. One child per family. And the neighbors are trained to drag off a woman who's pregnant with a second child. Trained that way. It's easy to train the public, the general public. You know, the general public scare me. Mass man scares me. Because they're so easily conditioned with new normals. And they don't think at all. They react emotionally. Those who give them the new normals know this. They know how to do it. It's formula. They create social approval and social disapproval. The same technique that's been used in the West now, and the same guys behind it at the United Nations have drawn up the policies to use the same programs in the Western world. You've got to think for yourself, or you're doomed. Now we'll go to the callers now, and we've got Bernard from Philly. Are you there, Bernard?
Hey, hello. Thanks for taking my call. You once said that you would discuss the meaning of... the esoteric meaning of St. John, the Divine's Lodge?
Yeah.
Could you do that?
Well, you understand that St. John is a high figure in Masonry. And there's different meanings to the word John itself, even the pronunciation of it. And one of them, you have Jonathan, which is Johann Athen or Aten. Aten is always the sun. Another level, you have the meaning of Yone, which is the female organ. And you'll find lots of those in the Middle East, around Jerusalem, in fact. They've dug up thousands of them while they're looking for remnants of the holy people in the past. They find that because the female was worshipped in ancient times very much in that area. But you also have the other meaning, too, of Ion. And because the J was silent, and they pronounced an I instead. So you have Ion, and they had the island of Iona in the, not the Mediterranean, but up through the Aegean Sea. and that was the place that was called the Temple of Fire, was on that particular island. And those priests were highly respected in the ancient world for their knowledge of the mysteries, which people call sciences, really. And so they have many meanings. And of course, we find, too, that John in the Bible was probably the only Gnostic Christian,
right,
that was allowed to be put into the Bible. The rest of them were Coptic Christians. And you'll find far more of the mystery religion, because they always began with the Word, and John does start off his gospel with the Word, and the Word became God. And you know, so this is what it means. There's another meaning, say, for those in the mystery religion down through the ages as to what John stands for. And he definitely goes through the mystery religion. Don't dismiss it completely, because there's a lot of truth in it. A lot of truth in the mystery as well, although it's corrupted in modern times. But he does go into the truths of a creator who can be in you. You can be in you. The same kind of spirit can run through you. And that's something that they go over and over in the Gospel of John. Almost overboard, he's trying to get a very essential message through, which all ancient Gnostics believed in. The Creator could work through people, and their fellow brothers who had the same experiences could also have that same spirit running through them. So you find that Jesus, too, says that the same spirit that is in me is therefore in you. Very important thing to understand. It means that your values, too, everything would be much the same, not because you were taught them, but you came to those values through your own experiences and conclusions.
Okay. IHS, in the Jesuits logo, what does that stand for?
Well, I'm not here to answer just questions on language. You'd understand. I could give courses on these things, and it'd take forever.
Okay.
They take for absolutely ever. But the Jesuits, after Ignatius Loyola, who did belong to Alumbrados, Alumbrados means illumined ones, and they were really the Spanish section of the Knights Templar. And he was caught initially by the Vatican fighting against Rome, and then he was initiated into the church and became the first, what they call the first black pope. His name itself, Ignatius, means fire starter, you see. And he was the one who was to start the fire, again, illumined one. He used these terms all down through the ages. He's an igniter. And you'll find the Jesuit, if you were to look into the name of the God, that is always I Am, the ultimate God, the Yahweh one, according to the mysteries, is the Demiurgos, the Demiurge. And therefore, if you were to go into some other language, like such as French, and you said Jesuit, you say I Am. Jesuit would be I Am. Jesuit. It's all a play on words that is camouflaged from the general public.
You know, I'm thinking, when I read about the history of the Jesuits, I came to the conclusion that they were sent, that they were created to infiltrate the Catholic Church. Do you think that's the case?
I have no doubt. They certainly brought a whole new perspective into the Catholic Church. But you've got to understand, too, the Catholic Church, from its foundations, that tried to bring in the pagans and get them to accept this new church, adopted so much of the pagan customs and saints, or gods which became saints within the Catholic Church, that to an extent they became paganized themselves. And within all the pagan religions, there's a lot of the truth of the mystery religion and a lot of the allegory of the mystery religion that comes in with it. The general public always worship the exoteric in every religion, including all pagan religions, and they seldom understand the esoteric involved within, and it was the same within the Catholic Church. So, but even at that, the founding of the Catholic Church had tremendous impetus from the very beginning, because it was a wealthy church to start with, because it was authorized by Rome, but it also had big financial backers of its day that basically the Rockefeller types that existed in those days sponsored it into existence. And because it put an emphasis on obedience and peacefulness, it became a very useful tool for those who already ruled the world, and it was promoted. But within the religion itself, there's no doubt, there's a lot of truths as well, and a lot of philosophies that can never be denied. And it doesn't mean that everyone who served the Catholic Church either understood the inner aspects of it.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. And last question, do you...
I'll have to go to the next caller. You've asked the three already.
Okay.
All right. Now, I think we've got John from Texas there. Are you there, John?
Hello?
Yes, is that John?
Yeah. I need to ask you some questions about when I was watching the Olympics and I saw all the symbolism going through the Olympics, and it takes a wide range of people to make all that symbolism go off and work correctly in the limelight. And it just amazes me how deep-rooted and deep-seated all the symbolism and everything is in our society. And everyone has to probably know they're doing this. It just amazes me that people are doing this without knowing.
Oh, they know. They do know. They love to put big parades on in front of the public where they show all their emblems, and they also mock the public for their not understanding of what they're actually seeing, but enjoying it nonetheless. That's part of how they get their kicks at the top. And there's a lot of work goes into the planning and the practicing, etc., and the setting up of these staged events. You're right. Yeah, you're quite right.
Just one more quick question. What is the symbolism? I've seen a lot of presidential candidates and a lot of senators wearing a B on their cufflink or their suits. And
a B?
That's correct.
You're talking about the letter B or an actual insect?
The natural insect, the bumblebee, basically.
Oh, well, because that's... Napoleon had a cape made of golden bees that he... found the bees in a sarcophagus in Egypt. They loved the bee, and that became his symbol, the beehive. And they do talk about the perfect society and how they are the worker bee working towards the great work in this perfect ordered society. Every beehive is strictly ordered. And they likened it to the general public, with the elite at the top being royalty, getting royal jelly, and then the priesthood between them, and then the worker bees beneath. That's what they call the perfect society. And so they are the worker bees. So I'm not surprised they like the bee on their cufflink. Yeah.
Yeah, that's another point of them just laughing at the public once again. Am I correct?
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. And if you take the letter B as well, which they also use in that category, it's really a 13. They love the letter 13. And old Malay and all the rest of it, and his death. So they use the number 13, and one and the three reversed becomes the letter B, and it's also the McDonald's logo, if you notice, turned on its side.
Right, I've seen that logo, and it really amazes me now that I've been seeing a lot of things, and I'm awakened to in real history where our actual language came from. I'm amazed at what's just been before. It's truly amazing. Thank you very much. I don't want to take up any more of your time.
Okay,
I'll let you get to
another
caller.
Bye now. Then there's Matt from Chicago. Are you there, Matt?
Hi, good evening, Alan. How are you doing?
Yes.
The other day you were talking about Sitchin and the Anunnaki and how that argument makes us feel helpless. I'm not arguing for Sitchin.
It, yeah.
I don't agree with Sitchin's hypothesis. I'm more on the evolution. The problem with evolution, though, I mean, I hear, Darwinism and social Darwinism and eugenics. I'm just curious. Can you discuss the differences between all the views of creationism, evolution, and Anunnaki?
No, because I've got 10 minutes to go, and that would take days.
Yeah, that would take
a while. All I said about Sitchin is this. It falls right in with an agenda that was a psyops operation. It falls in with that agenda,
mm-hmm.
in line with it, which must make you suspect. And he literally created his own, the language that he supposedly deciphered, is his own special method. No one else will agree with him. And he's completely altered all the reality of it. If you read the Sumerian tablets yourself, it's no different from ancient India or Ra of Egypt, where the god inseminates himself and all the rest of it has sex with the spirit of the air. It's all to do with spirits, you understand, not people. But it was meant to make you feel that if some super extraterrestrial agency came in and created man to be an inferior slave, that you couldn't, then you could never beat it. And so therefore, if you swallow that, you're beaten already. That's how psychological operations work, is to make you feel helpless. Okay. And how could a slave made to be puny ever defeat its creator?
On the same note of that, Jordan Maxwell, when he talks about the end of the age, we're coming into the age of Sagittarius, I believe, or in Pisces right now, or Aquarius, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And, well, that's one argument. So, I mean, it sounds like possibly this could be the end of this age. And then you hear the people on the Christianity side, like the Council for National Policy, people pushing belief in having God and Jesus in your life to be able to get through this. That's another topic that I ponder frequently.
Well, ages are simply the elite's way of measuring time. And they use the stars, even in ancient times they did it too. Remember, the first reasons for watching and recording stars and planetary movements was to do with seasons and time for planting and all of this kind of stuff. But they also use it like a clock, like a solar clock or an annual clock. And they do have their plans written in the heavens, and they made them a long time ago. Hold on, I'll be back after this break. Hi, folks, I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix. And we've got Rick from California on the line there. And is there more to you want to say, Rick? Or was it Matt from Chicago?
Matt.
Yes.
You were talking again about the Jordan Maxwell and the ends of the age.
They always made a time clock, basically, and gave themselves a lot of room for the agenda. And there's no doubt about it. The age of Pisces was the age of basically the symbol of the fish that was used. And early Christians did use the symbol of the fish. And there's been lots of frescoes found, and they're in museums today, from the early missionaries that came out from the Middle East, mainly from Egypt, actually. So they use the symbol of the age. And there's no doubt about it. Freemasonry, in its own publications, has always promoted this next phase, the age of Aquarius, where supposedly they'd bring in gradually their new utopia. And, of course, it's going to be the hell for most of the people because they don't have much room for the profane. That means the masses in that organization.
That will be the age of environmentalism.
Yes.
And Mother Earth.
All of that. To reduce population, get rid of the useless eaters, as they call them.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll have their utopia, an organized society, a planned society. If you're a Planned Parenthood, well, this is the planned global village. And if you've got a job to do, if they need you for a task, then you might get born. If they don't, you will not. That literally is what it's boiling down to.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. You're a very, very old agenda, and these guys work in centuries, maybe thousands of years. And they certainly do work towards it. Mind you, they're well rewarded for doing so at the top. And we've got, is it Rick in California there? You there, Rick?
Yes. You there, Alan?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Somebody came in and said, we got Rick, and it sounded like you, and it wasn't. So I think, I wonder if somebody's listening in. But I wanted to mention something about, you know, further down in that military article you read about the troops being stationed here, it said for an earthquake in California. And
they'll use any excuse under the sun. But if they're getting non-lethal weaponry and getting and training alongside police, everybody should get their hair in the back of their neck standing up when military trains alongside police, especially active duty troops. Yeah.
What I wanted to say was that on November 13th, which is on a Tuesday, 11/13, a sacred number, the biggest Homeland Security earthquake drill in history is being conducted, called the Great Shakeup. And I went to the USGS, and they had the waves standing still on Los Angeles for big waves, like fast, like huge seismic 7.8. And they got it all mapped out. I think they're going to harp us, Alan.
Oh, they'll use all of this. There's big towers going up across the country as well. I don't know if you've seen them. They're big, wide, thick towers. A cable, occasional cameras sticking off them, but massive cables going into them. And I think it's part of the ELF control frequencies that Technotronic era Zygmunt Brzezinski was talking about. I think that's what they're setting them up for, all these towers. They're quite amazing structures when you see them. They're definitely not the usual microwave with the drums on them and so on. These are just very, very wide towers, about 30 feet high, 35 feet high.
Then I wanted to ask a question. I just got Morals and Dogma, the 1950 edition. And how significantly different is that from the 1871 original edition?
I don't know. I haven't read the later versions. Mm-hmm. It's probably pretty well on the ball, though, but I've got the early versions, and that's the ones you have to try and get a hold of.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Alan.
Thanks for calling. Well, from Hamish and myself in Ontario, Canada, it's good night to me, your God, or your gods go with you.